Hello, Juno. This is Juno Afternoon, and what a lovely Juno afternoon it is. Here we are in Alaska's capital city at KTOO, and welcome to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Joan Pardis. Today in the studio, we will have information about the JEDC, the Juno Economic Development Council's Innovation Summit. We'll be talking to Carol Race from the library about the Global Lens film series. Tim Olson will give us an update on 360 North TV, and we'll also talk about beginning waltz lessons with Emily Lockie from Dancing Moonlight Studio. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more, right here at KTOO.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Japanese artist selected to carve a large granite sculpture in Rapid City, South Dakota, visited the Pine Ridge Reservation Saturday. As Jim Kent reports, the sculptor's goal is to gain knowledge from everyone in the community, including the Lakota people, to include in his work.
Masayuki Nagase begins work on Rapid City's Main Street Square art project this summer. The artist hosted a series of community meetings over the past week to offer area residents the opportunity to provide input into the appearance of the granite sculpture. Nagase says he felt it was important to visit with the Lakota people since their culture has played such a large role in South Dakota.
Some part of my images reflect their life in the past. But also I'd like to get information of their life in it. Today,
Nagase's primary themes for the sculpture are wind and water. John Gosen Center is a Lakota artist who attended Nagase's Pine Ridge meeting. He sees the artist's community workshops being as beneficial to the community as they are to the artist.
I'm just hoping that people, through a project like this and the questions he asks, actually invokes in us an inner perspective about what's really important about this area. You know, so that's something that I think that he can bring to us, you know.
Masayuki Nagase's Main Street Square sculpture is expected to take 3 to 5 years to complete and is the largest privately funded public art project in the country. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent on the Pine Ridge Reservation.
The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources has hired a tribal liaison to help with relationships with tribes in the state. According to the Associated Press, the department has named Michelle Allness to the position. Allness worked for the State Department of Tourism as its tribal liaison. The Natural Resources Department and tribes have been clashing over a number of issues. Recently, plans for a mine and tribal wolf and night deer hunts. A Native American Food Sovereignty Alliance is being formed following a nationwide webinar held last week. The webinar attracted nearly 200 interested parties from across the country, according to First Nations Development Institute. The company, based in Colorado and New Mexico, says the effort will address food security, hunger, and nutrition in Native communities and will help give voice to issues of Native food system control and policy development. An in-person meeting will take place in April at a Food Sovereignty Summit in Wisconsin. American Indian Day was held Friday at the New Mexico State Legislature in Santa Fe. Some issues the state and tribes are working on include economic development, health care, and education. Navajo Nation President Ben Shelley says some of the bills he supports include appropriating money to a university to grow fresh produce, including tribal colleges in the state's lottery scholarship program, and building homes for veterans. Shelley was among tribal leaders who participated. There are 22 tribes with about 200,000 members in New Mexico. A lifetime chief of the Alabama Coushatta Indian Tribe of Texas has passed away. Chief Oscola Clayton Stilestein died last week after an illness. He was installed as a lifetime chief in the 1990s. The leader also served on the tribal council and was an elder in the Indian Presbyterian Church. Stilestein will lay in state on the reservation near Livingston. He was 80 years old at the time of his death. During this month in 2011, thousands of Canadians became eligible to receive Indian status after a change in legislation. The change allowed for eligibility for certain benefits like health and education. Descendants were denied status because their grandmothers married non-Indians. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC-CLIC-GIVE when filing online for your PFD. When you select KNBA-FM, Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, you support National Native News. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, Juno. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO, and I'm your host, Joan Pardis. The weather today is lovely. We're expecting some rain and showers this evening, partly cloudy this evening, and looks like mostly cloudy tomorrow with a slight chance of snow. But right now, it is quite lovely in Alaska's capital city. Here in the studio, I'm with Brian Hulse, the executive director of the Juneau Economic Development Council, and he's here to talk about the upcoming Innovation Summit. Hello, Brian.
Hi, Joan.
How are you today?
Fantastic. Thanks for having me on the show today.
Our pleasure. So what is the Innovation Summit?
This is a big event that we're putting on here at GEDC. We're very excited about it. It helps us to address two important goals that we have at the Juneau Economic Development Council. One is creating jobs and economic opportunities in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. And the other is increasing public awareness and appreciation for local and regional economic development issues. So through this conference, we hope to do some of each. It's an event that's a day and a half event, February 11th and 12th, trying to be as aware as we can about how busy people are. So we've scheduled this from 3:30 in the afternoon on Monday until 8 p.m. and then all day on Tuesday to really pack in as much learning and examples from and fresh ideas from outside, as well as opportunities for people engaged in different industry groups in our region to talk about some of their priorities and some of their needs.
Mm-hmm. Sounds very interesting. It sounds like the times are great. But what would people expect at the Innovation Summit? Is it a think tank of sorts, or is there breakout sessions?
We intend this to be very practical. There is an opportunity to learn from really what we believe is really national thought leaders, international thought leaders on some important economic development issues of our time, relevant to here, our region here in Southeast Alaska. And it might be more best if we talk about kind of who we're bringing in and what we're trying to achieve, because we have speakers that we're going to inspire and inform, but we also have opportunities for business priorities, industry priorities to be heard, flushed out, and delivered to, in this case, to political and government leaders here in Juneau from the region.
Sounds exciting. So who are the speakers and what are the topics?
Yeah, we've got three. We have many speakers, Alaskan and from outside. So I'm going to maybe focus more attention on the folks from outside, because this is really the unique opportunity that the Innovation Summit allows us, is to bring some perspectives from outside of Alaska. So we've invited up the executive director of the Portland Development Commission. And Portland is it's a city. It's larger than our region. It's a comparable, as close as we can get to an experience that we think is very relevant for economic development. How they've done some really positive things in the Portland area. Anyone that's visited Portland knows that the downtown Portland area has really rebounded well, and they've seen a really revitalized economy in Portland. And part of what they've been doing of late has really been focusing on industry groups called clusters. And we have taken on this approach as well. In the last 2 years, we've really focused a lot of attention at the Juneau Economic Development Council on looking at what are the key industries that that represent the employment in our region, the private sector, and how do we make them grow. So by bringing up the folks from the Portland Development Commission, they've been working on this a few years more than we have, and they're going to be able to help people understand why this approach is useful, what has been their experience in the Portland area, And we want to be able to learn also from that experience. We're off to a good start with what we're trying to do, but there's always more to learn. And so this will not only inform the industry groups that we're working with on the approaches and how we can adjust our work, but it will also give folks that are wondering, what is cluster development anyway? You don't have to listen to me. You can hear it from somebody who's been working with it for a few years longer than we have.
So is Portland Development Council person
Patrick Quinton is the executive director at the Portland Economic Development Commission.
And he'll be your keynote speaker?
He's be one of our, we have three keynote speakers. Well, ambitious. And later on Monday night at 6:30 in the evening, we have Senator Jim Costa, a former senator of the state of Washington. He just retired from the state of Washington, where he chaired the Commission on Economic Development and Innovation. And we've asked him to come because any issue around economic development in our region, our community, in our state of Alaska, the role of government is very important. And in fact, in some ways, because we live in the Tongass National Forest, 95% of land is federally owned, there's really not a lot we can do without good engagement with government, both federal and state. So what Senator Costa represents to us is an opportunity to understand the experience in the state of Washington about what they have done to be able to encourage economic development and innovation. They've done some interesting things that we think could be valuable for us here in Alaska. We want to explore them. He's not coming up to prescribe anything to us. He's coming up to share what's worked there, and it's up to us to see what we might want to consider. But things such as that they put together a Washington Economic Development Commission. So at a statewide level, they've made this very interesting partnership between private sector, state entities to come up with a broad plan for what direction the economy of Washington should go, or at least what direction do they want it to go, and where should the state should be providing their support. They've also been very targeted in with their research efforts, something that's important to us here in Juneau as well. We've been working with our research community in trying to link them closer to economic development issues. They work with technology transfer, another area that we think is also very, very important. But generally, they've really had an interesting partnership with the private sector, and have dealt with and have some experience, just like we do, but have a perspective on what is the right role of government. Government and business, it's a relationship that has to work well together. It's a relationship that often seems at odds with each other. We've specifically put that at 6:30 in the evening because with the session in town, we're hoping that staff and some legislators from throughout the state will take advantage of the opportunity to come down and listen to that as well at Centennial Hall.
Okay. So if you're just joining us, you're listening to Juneau Afternoon. I'm in the studio with Brian Hulst from the Juneau Economic Development Council. We're talking about the Innovation Summit that will take place next Monday and Tuesday at Centennial Hall. We just talked about two of the experts that are part of the keynote panel, and there is one more, and I believe that's an Alaskan. Is that correct?
I know. We have plenty of Alaskans that are going to be speaking with us. But we have three folks from outside. But mm-hmm. Beth Pendleton from the U.S. Forest Service, she's going to be addressing the group briefly as well. They've provided a lot of support to this effort. Commissioner Bell will be talking to us. She'll actually be introducing Senator Costa and the work that he's done in the state of Washington. Lieutenant Governor Treadwell will speak briefly and also introduce our lunch speaker on Tuesday, who is Dane Smith, who's going to be talking about creating shared value. And creating shared value, it's a business concept, an economic development concept that talks about creating economic value in a way that also creates value for society. And it's a really important concept. In some ways, it's sort of obvious, and wouldn't that be good? But basically, when I refer to them, this idea comes from the Harvard Business School, Michael Porter and Mark Kramer, over the last several years, and through their study and their work with corporations, they've identified that when corporations look at the social impact that they're having on communities and recognize social issues in their communities, and when they can take into consideration in their business planning those social impacts that they're having, they find that very often, maybe not always, but very often, not only can they address, have a positive impact on these social issues, they can also increase their bottom line. So it's a way where companies can, where you can engage the power of the private sector to not only reward shareholders, but also reward the community members that surround firms.
Sounds like a win-win.
It definitely sounds like a win-win.
So the Innovation Summit, taking place next week, Monday and Tuesday, lots of speakers from outside, experts from within Alaska, talking about innovation, talking
yes.
about how to...
What are the elements of innovation? So innovation is this broad concept, and this is our... We held an event like this. We call it an economic summit, and we're calling this an innovation summit. And we're not pretending to cover all elements of innovation at this event, but what we recognize is that in an advanced economy, innovation is what drives growth. And so we need to talk about what are the elements that drive innovation. And talent is an important element. We'll be talking about the role of the university in research, with STEM education as a component of driving talent. Financial resources are an important element. We'll have conversations about where can you get financial resources for products. Collaboration is a key element, and I haven't even mentioned the industry cluster working groups that are going to meet at the summit as well, discuss their priorities, put forward their specific action initiatives that they've identified and have been working on over several years, and specific asks or requests that they have at the federal and state level regarding priorities that they think are important for economic growth in the region.
Okay. The clusters that you're talking about, what are the industry clusters? Are we talking about tourism and resource development, or what are the clusters?
Yeah, no, you're doing great. And clusters, we use this term because it means something very specific in the economic development world, and it's really about a set of firms.
Mm-hmm.
So the focus of our work with the cluster work is firms in an industry area. And so the clusters that we're talking about are you're correct, visitor products industry, the ocean products industry, the mining service and supply industry. We're very supportive of the mines. We're trying to put our efforts here at JDC to supporting those firms that are supporting the mines. That's where the big economic opportunity for our firms in Juneau are. We're also looking at renewable energy as a seed cluster. That's an industry where we see potential in our region. And the fifth cluster, which is going to be really unveiled here at the summit, exciting news is that there's a group of people engaged in the research here in Juneau that are interested in operating as a cluster. So not only looking at the collaboration that can occur amongst themselves, but looking at themselves also as an engine for economic growth. So research dollars that can be brought into our community in the university system, federal research dollars, as well as research dollars that can go to the private sector. So that's going to be our newest industry group. And so what we do with an industry group is we ask them a simple question. How do we strengthen your industry? What do you need to strengthen your industry?
Interesting. It sounds really fascinating that it will be a lot of information, a lot of different perspectives. And so is this invite only, or is it open to the public? Should you be a business owner to attend? Who is your perfect candidate to attend this event?
Anybody that's interested in economic development. So you're going to get a chance to understand some concepts that are really straightforward, but I really think these are fresh ideas, new perspectives on economic development. And a lot of us are interested in economic development. We particularly, we would really like to see business people engage, because this is, in the end, while we're a part of, one of our goals is to help educate our community about the importance of economic development in our region and how that really operates. We are about trying to create jobs and economic opportunities at the Juneau Economic Development Council. And the jobs are created when opportunities expand for the businesses. So businesses come, they do better, and in the end, jobs emerge.
It sounds like a great event. So it's the Innovation Summit, which is being hosted by the Juneau Economic Development Council. It's next Monday and Tuesday at Centennial Hall. It starts at 3:30 on Monday and goes into the evening, and it's all day on Tuesday. Check it out at JEDC's website, jedc.org. www.nativeamericanradio.org. And if you're a business owner, if you are interested in starting a business, if you've got an idea that's rolling around in your head, it seems like the perfect spot for you. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, I just want to really encourage people to come. We're making there's a registration. There's a small fee to attend. And the reason we charge is because we really feel great about the value we're bringing. It's an incredible array of talented speakers, and we need some help defraying that cost. So we're asking people to pay a bit to attend. But don't let that be a barrier. It's super flexible pricing, as you'll see on the website. There's a price there for anyone interested in attending.
That sounds great. Thank you so much for coming into the studio today.
Thank you, Joan.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 4th of February. 2013. It's the birthday of Betty Friedan, born 1921 in Peoria, Illinois, author of The Feminine Mystique, which came out in 1963, one of the most influential nonfiction books of the 20th century, about educated women at the end of World War II who were leading ostensibly idyllic domestic lives and yet who felt unfulfilled, unhappy, and restless. It's the birthday of Charles A. Lindbergh, born in Detroit, 1902, who in 1927 became the first man to fly solo nonstop across the Atlantic Ocean, New York to Paris. It's the birthday in London, 1916, of the poet Gavin Ewart, author of many books of poetry, started writing poetry early when he was just 17, and then when World War II broke out, he stopped for about 20 years. His collection, Londoners, came out in 1964. Gavin Ewart, who wrote, "For nursery days are gone, nightmare is real, and there are no god fairies. The fox's teeth are in the bunny, and nothing can remove them, honey." It's the birthday of the novelist and short story writer Robert Coover, born Charles City, Iowa, in 1932, whose first novel was The Origin of the Brunists, 1966, about the lone survivor of a mining accident, goes on to start a religious cult. Robert Coover, who said he writes because art blows life into the lifeless, death into the deathless, author of The Universal Baseball Association Incorporated, The Public Burning, and A Child Again. It was on this day, 1789, the Electoral College unanimously elected George Washington, the first president of the United States. It's the birthday of the novelist McKinley Cantor, born in Webster City, Iowa, 1904. Wrote a number of Civil War novels, including Andersonville, which he spent 25 years researching before it came out in 1955, about the Confederate prison camp where 50,000 Union soldiers died. It's the birthday of the writer Stuart Onan, born in Pittsburgh, 1961, worked as an aerospace engineer for years, and in the evenings went down to his basement to write. Published his first novel, Snow Angels, in 1994, about a murder in a small town in western Pennsylvania. Stuart Onan, who said, "My own life isn't terribly interesting, even to myself, and that is why I write about people and places so different from the ones I know." Here's a poem for today by Linda Hogan, Celebration, Birth of a Colt. When we reach the field, she is still eating the heads of yellow flowers, and pollen has turned her whiskers gold. Lady, her stomach bulges out, the ribs have grown wide. We wait, our bare feet dangling in the horse trough, warm water, where goldfish brush our smooth ankles. We wait, while the liquid breaks down ladies' dark legs, and that slick, wet colt, like a black tadpole, darts out, beginning at once to sprout legs. She licks it to its feet, the membrane still there, red, transparent, the sun coming up shines through, the sky turns bright with morning, and the land with pollen blowing off the corn, land that will always own us, everywhere it is red. Celebration, Birth of a Colt by Linda Hogan from her collection Red Clay, published by the Greenfield Review Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, helping individuals and businesses make their best impression where people learn about them first, on the Internet. Learn more at Reputation.com. Produced by Kathy Roach, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Hello, Juno. This is Juno Afternoon, Alaska's capital city at KTOO. I'm your host, Joan Pardis, and joining me in the KTOO studio is Carol Race and Catherine Melville from the Juno Public Libraries. Good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon.
How are you today?
Doing great.
We're doing well. Thanks for having us.
Oh, I'm thrilled to have you. So we're here to talk a little bit about the Global Lens 2012 project, and I see here that this whole series premiered at the Museum of Modern Art in January, and then it travels to 35 cities across the U.S. and Canada with international award-winning films. And we have two more in the series, one this Sunday and one next Sunday. Is that correct?
That's right. We've been showing them every Sunday for several weeks at the Downtown Library. So we've got one coming up this Sunday, February 10th at 3 p.m. called Morning. It's a film by an Iranian filmmaker, and then the Sunday after that, February 17th, will be The Prize, which is an Argentinian film. And in conjunction with us, the films have been showing at Goldtown Nickelodeon as well on Mondays and Saturdays.
Oh, that sounds great. It looks like February 11th, we have an Albanian film at the Goldtown Nickelodeon, and then the Iranian film again on the 18th, Morning. And I was reading through this pamphlet. The Morning film sounds really wonderful, and Morning not as in morning, afternoon, and night, but Morning as in grief. And it just sounds like a dynamic film. There's this little booklet here that talks about each of the films, and it is just sounds like a great array.
That's right. And if you visit the Juno Library's book blog, we've actually put trailers up, so if you want to have a chance to take a look at a little snippet of what these films are like, that's a great place to check that out.
And what's the address of that book blog?
If you just Google Juno Public Library book blog, you will find it.
Oh, that sounds great. Alrighty, and this event, the Global Lens series, is a partnership between Friends of the Juno Public Libraries, Goldtown Nickelodeon, and Juno Rotaract. So the films at Goldtown, is there a fee when you go to the Goldtown?
I believe so.
Okay. And then for the free showing, that would be on
at the library.
At the libraries on Sundays at 3 p.m. What else is going on at the library?
Well, I will add just one quick thing about the films. And part of our participation in Global Lens is that we get copies of the DVDs to add to the library's collection once all is said and done. So if you miss the screening at the library, you don't have a chance to go to Goldtown, all of these libraries are actually in the library's catalog right now, which is online at juno.org/library, and you can place holds on them and watch them at home.
Oh, that sounds great. Yeah, they seem like a bunch of really original and fascinating films, and it gives you obviously a different perspective since they're international filmmakers from all corners of the globe. So in the library, besides the Global Lens series, what's going on in February?
Well, thanks for asking, Joan, because I would like to talk about a program this weekend coming up, Juno Drawing Classes with Artist Lee Post. This is art, comic art for kids to learn how to do comic art, and it's all free. Sponsored by the Friends of the Library, and Alaska Robotics is helping us out by coming and giving instruction also. We have Saturday, February 9th, from 10 a.m. to noon for second to fourth graders, a two-hour program. Parents are welcome to stay. And that afternoon, February 9th, from 2 until 5, will be for 5th to 12th graders. So we're not doing registration. Come, we will have room for you. We also have the next day, February 10th, Sunday, at the Valley Library, 2 to 5 for grades 5 to 12. So that's this coming weekend.
That sounds interesting. So the Saturday classes are all at the downtown public library, and the Valley classes for 5th graders through 12th is out in the Valley.
They're at Douglas Library. If I said downtown, I apologize. The Saturday classes are at the Douglas Library.
Okay, that sounds great. So Douglas Library on Saturday, and then the Valley on Sunday.
Correct.
And all different grades, 2nd to 4th in the morning, and then 5th through 12th in the afternoon, and then another opportunity in the Valley. The poster looks great, and I know that kids just love comic books, so it seems like a great opportunity to learn how to draw your own.
Yeah, artist Lee Post is coming from Anchorage, and he has some books out that we'll have available for you to look at. He also has his art posted at Alaska Robotics right now, so you can take a look at it down there.
Oh, that sounds great. All righty, so that's this weekend, along with the Global Lens film on Sunday. And then what else is coming up as far as February events?
Well, let's see. You may have seen posters up. Pam Houston is going to be coming to town, and there is going to be an event on Saturday, February 23rd, 7:30 p.m. at the Downtown Library. You may have read her book, Sight Hound, or she's got a new one out called Contents May Have Shifted, and she's going to be accompanied by a singer-songwriter from Anchorage named Emma Hill. So that's coming up later in the month, Saturday, February 23rd. And then on Thursday, February 28th, our own local treasurers, Nora and Richard Downauer, are going to be giving a presentation at 6:30 p.m. at the Downtown Library.
That sounds wonderful. What will the presentation be on?
The Downauers are both poet laureates that have won that award, and they will be reading their writings. And it will be on an OWL video conference for the rest of Alaska to view also. So some of the smaller libraries around the state that cannot afford to get them in can have them through a video conference. I think it'll be a wonderful event for us, because they will be here in live for us in Juneau, and wonderful for some of the smaller libraries also.
That sounds like a wonderful event. So lots is happening at the public libraries in the capital city. And to find out about these events, is there a website that people can go to?
Our website is ground zero for everything happening at the library. It is www.juneau.org/library.
So you can find out all the details. Thank you, ladies, for coming to the studio today.
Thank you very much.
Hello, Juno. You are listening to Juno Afternoon, and I'm your host, Joan Pardis. So far today, we have talked about the Innovation Summit that will take place on Monday and Tuesday of next week. That event is hosted by the Juno Economic Development Council and is open to everyone. Then we just chatted with Carol Race and Catherine Melville from the library about the upcoming Global Lens film series and everything that's happening at the library, which is quite a bit. And here in the studio with me now is Tim Olson from 360 North TV.
Hi.
Hello, Tim.
Thanks for letting me stop by.
I know it was a long journey for you from down the hall.
I know. So I usually come on occasionally and tell people about some upcoming interesting things that they might see on public TV.
So please do so.
That's what I was going to do, because you might be interested to hear about these things. Besides the coverage of the legislature and the many things that 360 North broadcasts statewide, we work on some special projects. And we have these projects are usually Alaska content in nature. We focus on Alaska programming. And we have a new series that just started this last week, a 10-part television series called Alaska Statehood Pioneers, in their own words. The interviews were shot in 2004. Many of the people that were interviewed at that time are no longer with us because they were around 50 years ago during the Alaska Constitutional Convention and that big push for statehood that happened. And we were able to catch many of those people and spend a lot of time with them. That material was used in another public television project to celebrate the 50th anniversary of statehood, but we went on to do this Statehood Pioneers in Their Own Words series to take a deeper look at the Constitutional Convention and these wonderful stories that these people told about coming to Alaska and being Alaskans and being involved in statehood. So last week, the first episode about the Constitutional Convention aired. This week, this last Sunday, we had the first episode that looked specifically at people, and people in Juneau will recognize some of the names that are going to come up in this series. We get to spend an hour with George Rogers, with Judge Tom Stewart, you know, both very well-known Juneau people. We also have an episode that focuses on Vic Fisher, one on Katie Hurley, George Sundborg, who lived in Juneau and had very interesting jobs with the government here, Jack Coghill, Maynard Lomborg. And we also have two episodes that include former Governor Jay Hammond, that he was not a huge proponent of statehood when it was first proposed, but as he tells the story, he came around a little bit and eventually became the governor. So this series was done in conjunction with various sponsors. We had a grant from the Alaska Humanities Forum, and the Alaska Committee helped support this series every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. And for the next 8 or 9 weeks, it's a 10-part series, and repeating on Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. And we also have the videos and the transcripts from the one-hour programs, and the transcripts from the original much longer interviews are available at 360north.org. You'll see a button there that says Alaska Statehood Pioneers, and you click on that button, and you can read the interviews that were conducted by Dr. Terrence Cole from the University of Alaska historian, well-known Alaska historian, conducted the interviews, some of which are 4, 5, 6 hours long, and we boiled down the essence of that for this series to this 10-part series, but the longer interviews can be read at the website. So that's a great project that we've been working on and has come along and have been working on for years, and we're really glad to have it on the air. Something completely different that has just started this last week. We've teamed up with the Alaska Small Business Development Center. They provide workshops around the state for people who are interested in starting businesses or get help with their businesses. And we have videotaped their first workshop, the introductory workshop, and we're showing that on 360 North and various places in the schedule. We also have that as video on demand at 360north.org. There's a little story about the Small Business Development Center. The unique thing about this is that when the Small Business Development Center helps people prepare to start a business, they require that you come to one of their workshops before you get to meet with a business counselor. And watching this program allows you to meet with a business counselor without having to travel to a location where they're putting on one of the workshops. For a lot of people in the rest of the state, this is really helpful because they don't have to travel to an area where the workshops are being conducted. So that's a new thing for us, and we're going to be bringing more small business development workshops to the public television audience on 360 North in the future. And they're very interesting as just a general audience person to listen to and see the things that people look at when they're working on businesses in Alaska and thinking about starting a business.
That sounds very interesting. So at 360 North, we could find out what's going on right now at the legislature. We could find out what transpired to make Alaska a state, and then we could actually prepare the platform for the future by educating future business owners in the small business component that you have going.
Some of the many things that we have on, you know, we carry a lot of Alaska programming, and when the legislature's in session, we change our schedule a little bit, so we only have our other programming during certain times of the prime time in the evening, and the legislature runs for up to 12 hours a day of our live coverage. That's also available on demand at our website at 360north.org. Do I have time to talk about one more really unique project?
You do.
Oh, good, because there's something else that's in the future here in the next couple of months. 2 years ago, this guy named Jeff Brown, he works for public radio. You might have heard of him.
He used to
be out of Juneau Afternoon. Came to me and said, you know, Tim, now that the 50th anniversary of statehood is over, there's another 50th anniversary that's really unique and people in Juneau might be interested in, the 50th anniversary of the Alaska Marine Highway. We kind of set off on a little journey to see if we could put together a project that would really sort of commemorate the anniversary, gather the history, and we are producing a four-part television series and an oral history project, which will be a collection at the Alaska Film Archives of the first 50 years of the Alaska Marine Highway. The first episode is just being completed a few minutes ago. I was watching parts of that we're finishing up for a premiere that's coming up here at the end of the month. That episode will be distributed nationally to other PBS stations, to other public stations around the country, and will be showing on 360 North at a time soon to be announced early in the spring. We're looking at March and April for the premiere of that. So a great Alaska history project that fulfills our mission of providing Alaska public affairs information, and a really fun thing to look at and celebrate the history along with the folks at the Marine Highway and everyone in the state, because it's such an integral part of life in Juneau and life in Southeast. And as we show in this documentary that people might want to see, it really affects people all around the state through Prince William Sound, Anchorage, out in the Aleutians and Kodiak, and is a 3,500-mile, very unique and unusual method of travel that people here know a lot about and will help them celebrate having that, and people in other places may not know about, and we'll let them know a little bit more about it. So,
sounds like a great project. So for all these projects, for the Alaska Statehood Pioneers, for the upcoming Alaska Marine Highway, for the Small Business Administration's educational workshops, to find out when and where it is, the best place is the website?
Well, the website's great, 360north.org. 360NORTH.org. You can find a lot of information about what's on right now. We stream our program stream, so you can watch TV online if you want. You can watch the videos that you want to watch. And there's scheduling information there. And everything I've talked about today has a separate story you can find. There's images at the bottom, and you can click on those and find out more and get broadcast times and dates and in many instances links to other bits of information that you might want to do a little more research about.
That sounds great. Tim, thank you so much for joining us
today.
Yeah,
thanks, Joan.
All righty.
On Monday, February 11th, Juneau Jazz and Classics presents Jake Shimabukuro, ukulele playing like it's never been done here before. Compared to artists as wide-ranging as Jimi Hendrix to Miles Davis to Yo-Yo Ma, this concert is one you'll have to see and hear for yourself. So don't miss it, an unforgettable evening at the J.D. High Auditorium. More information and tickets at jazzandclassics.org, The Jack, Hearthside, and At the Door. For the ukulele wizard, Jake Shimabukuro.
His bird note. How can a man learn to call so convincingly like a boreal owl? Or an eastern screech owl? By dedicating more than 30 years, as Denver Holt has, to studying the birds in the field. Holt, calling here, conducts field research on 8 species of owls in Alaska and Montana. He tells us why.
You know, for me, they're fascinating. I think I enjoy everything about their adaptation to the environments in which they live. You got to have some intuitive feel of the animals that you work with, and you only get that intuitive feel by being out in the field with them.
Denver says wildlife researchers spend little time in the field anymore.
The scary part about this is that we're using those data to manage our natural resources, and they're based on miniature studies, short periods of time. So that's very concerning for people like us who do long-term studies and are proud of the fact that we're still in the field. I think winter is a blast. We all love trapping and banding in the wintertime. Is what we're doing right now is we're trapping and banding long-eared owls and solid owls, part of our winter project.
To learn more about Denver's work at the Owl Research Institute, begin at birdnote.org.
Hello, Juno. You are still listening to Juno Afternoon, and I'm Joan Pardis. Here in the studio, we have Emily Lockey from Dancing Moonlight Studio. Hi, Emily.
Hello.
What is Dancing Moonlight Studio?
Dancing Moonlight Studio is my business that I just opened up last year. I've been dreaming about this ever since I was 15 and started teaching dancing, that someday here in Juno I would open a start a business where I would teach ballroom, Latin, and swing dancing.
Oh, how exciting. Where is this?
Currently, we do not have our own facility or studio at the moment. We're hoping someday to reach that point. But right now, we are renting the classroom space at Pavitt Health and Fitness and teaching classes a couple nights a week.
Oh, that sounds great. So beginning waltz lessons start soon. When do they start?
We actually started a couple weeks ago, but the way that we do teach our lessons, we have about 10 minutes in the beginning of each class that if we have any new students, I work with them while our other students are practicing to get the new students up to speed with the basic steps.
So beginning waltz lessons take place when?
Every Tuesday from 7:30 until 9 o'clock p.m. at Pavitt Health and Fitness.
Sounds great. Do you have any other classes going on right now?
Yes, we do. We teach beginning swing at 6 p.m. on Fridays and intermediate swing at 7:30 p.m. on Fridays.
Wow. Okay, so you have two classes on Friday and one class on, that was Wednesday night?
Tuesday night.
Tuesday night, I'm sorry. And that's at 7:30 till 9?
Yes.
Okay. And if people want to find out information about Dancing Moonlight Studio, do you have a website or a Facebook page?
We do have a Facebook page. You can just look us up, Dancing Moonlight Studio. And you can also email me at dancingmoonlightstudio@gmail.com.
That sounds great. So being an instructor and finally getting this dream of yours together, how does it feel?
It's amazing. I've been teaching for over 10 years, and I took a break because I had a couple children, and so I was taking time off from teaching, and to finally be able to come back and start teaching again and share my love for dancing is just so wonderful.
Okay, now I know this is a beginning class and you have a beginning swing class, but should people be intimidated? Should they just be like, no matter who you are or what you are, you could just come and learn to dance? Is that the type of instructor you
are? That is the type of instructor I am. I love to share the joy of dancing with other people. And when they come into the classroom, my teaching style isn't like the normal, formal, high society style ballroom dancing. It's very low-key, laid-back. We like to joke around and have a lot of fun during the lessons.
Sounds good. Do you need to come with a partner?
No, you do not.
Okay. So once again, the beginning waltz lessons are on what night and where?
Tuesday evenings at Pavitt Health and Fitness from 7:30 until 9 p.m.
So that's tomorrow.
That is tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And the other classes?
On Fridays, beginning swing starts at 6 p.m. and intermediate swing starts at 7:30 p.m.
And it's a drop-in class, so if you want to come, you could come. You shouldn't feel that you had to start at the very beginning.
Exactly, yes.
Okay. And the way for people to reach you?
They can look us up on Facebook, or they can email me at dancingmoonlightstudio@gmail.com, or they can give me a call at 500-7332.
Great. Emily, thank you for joining us in the studio today.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
All righty.
Leapin' Lizards! Annie the Musical is in town. Juno Douglas High School will perform this timeless Broadway sensation February 8th, 9th, 22nd, and 23rd at 7 p.m. with a sing-along matinee at 2 p.m. on February 10th at the JDHS Auditorium. Tickets available at Hearthside and thejack.org. Come out of the rain and enjoy our fun-filled show. And remember to always smile, darn ya, smile.
Hello, Juno. This is Juno Afternoon, and I'm your host, Joan Pardes. We are listening to Jake play the ukulele. Jake will be in Juno next week on Monday at the Juno Douglas High School at 7:30. This concert is presented by the Juno Jazz and Classics, and that man can play the ukulele. It sounds like a violin, a cello, and many other instruments, so come on down and check it out. And other events at the Juno Douglas High School Auditorium is the high school production of Annie, which we just heard about. Tomorrow in the studio with Pat Moore, Michaela Moore will be here to talk about that upcoming show, along with Andy Klein, who's directing this year's Wearable Art Extravaganza. Jeremy Johnson will be here with details about the Community Emergency Response Team training tomorrow night, along with Maria Offer about yoga for children classes. That's all tomorrow at 3 on Juno Afternoon with Pat Moore. Right now, as far as weather, we've got increasing clouds, winds kicking up this evening near downtown Juno and Douglas. Tomorrow will be mostly cloudy with a chance of snow and rain, and the highs will be around 35. Once again, winds will be kicking up near downtown Juno tomorrow and Douglas. And then for the rest of the week, it looks like snow and rain and a little wind all hovering around 32, 33, getting colder later in the week. So thank you for joining us today at Juno Afternoon. You've been listening to KTOO in Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay area, tuned to K276AF 103.1. In Lemon and Switzer Creek, K269AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM at 88.1, Hooner at 91.9, in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210 AS at 89.9. In Juno, you could also receive K2 on GCI Cable Juno on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard at digital channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Have a great afternoon. All Things Considered is next.
Civil charges are planned against Standard & Poor's for overrating mortgage-backed securities.
The suit by federal and state prosecutors would deal with ratings made prior to the 2008 financial crisis.
Today is Monday, February 4th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Audie Cornish. Also in this hour, baby boomers. They have...